I have an awesome show lined up for you today. Nick Dwyer is back from the fantastic Digging in the Carts documentary series on Japanese video game music. It's up on YouTube. You should go check it out. The series has returned now on Red Bull Music Academy Radio at rbmaradio.com. There he is streaming on Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Fantastic shows. Got brand new music, brand new interviews, and some fantastic discussions with people that were also influenced by these composers when it came to the music that they produced themselves. Second, I want to mention that hopefully, if everything works out, my schedule's been really nuts lately, but if everything works out, we'll have a Sega CD-centric episode next week. If it really works out, we're going to be doing Snatcher. There's a lot of people that are trying to be organized for that show. We're trying to line up a bunch of different schedules, but hopefully that's going to be lined up, and we'll be talking Snatcher next week. So, if you do have any Sega CD memories of Snatcher, I want you to email those in to kevin@backinmyplay.com. Let me know, did you like trade in your Super Nintendo to get a Sega CD? Those are the things that I want to know, because I think it'd be really fun to have some listeners interact with the other audience and just share some more stories besides the people that are hosting on that particular episode. And finally, I want to say thank you so much to all the Patreon supporters. Again, this show is not possible without your support, and it means a lot, because it's not just the financial support, but it's really a vote of confidence when it comes to the audience that you believe in what we're doing with Back in My Play and the shows that are being produced and the love that goes into producing this show. So thank you so much to everyone that is supporting the show at patreon.com/backinmyplay. If you do really enjoy this show and you want to really help it going forward, that is the best way to do it. So thank you so much to everyone that is doing that at patreon.com/backinmyplay. Without further ado, here's the incredible talk with Nick Dwyer. Let's get to it. Hello, welcome back to Back in My Play. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and it's been way too long since I have talked to my friend Nick Dwyer. Nick, how are you?
I'm really good, Kevin. Good to be speaking with you again. And thanks for having me on.
Well, there's a really good reason for it, because if you guys haven't, you should really go back and listen to the previous interviews that we've done for Digging in the Carts. If you haven't checked out the series that originally aired, it's amazing. It was 2 years ago now on the Red Bull Music Academy YouTube page. And you go to Red Bull Music on YouTube. You can check out all six episodes of Digging in the Carts. And I actually was like rewatched them. I actually watched them, you know, every couple months, because you guys did such an incredible job with that series, and it was such a amazing like a love letter to video game music. And you had the opportunity to also introduce so many of these great composers that people didn't even know about, which is just outstanding.
Yeah, oh, thank you so much, Kevin. Yeah, it's you know, we still get a lot of incredible feedback from all around the world. And, you know, obviously that's one of the beauties of the internet, is that, you know, people are just stumbling across it for the very first time, you know, every second day. So, you know, we get messages from Brazil and Argentina and someone from Uzbekistan recently. And it's just great. It's really cool that you know, in this day and age, you can create something. You know, obviously, Tu and I, we put a lot of love into it, because we really, really cared about it. For me personally, it's a story that I've wanted to tell since I was a kid, and it's just great that even a couple of years on, it still lives on. People are still enjoying it, and even more so, it's super cool that 2 years on, we've finally got the radio series happening.
Yes, and that's like, for people that are, at least I'll give you like the time zones. If you're in the States, it's 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is when the episodes are airing right now at rbmaradio.com. That's the Red Bull Music Academy radio site. And it was like so crazy to see that pop up 2 weeks ago when the first episode came out, the first show was out, and being able to kind of listen to, you know, your interviews. You got to really just like, you got to run it like a radio station for video game music, picking out some great tracks, having some fantastic featured segments with specific composers, having interviews as well, and also getting some people that were influenced by the music themselves who have now gone on to make their own music on it. It's just a great blend.
Yeah, no, it's cool. We've been working on it for a very, very long time. You know, one of the things was for me, you know, when we were doing Digging the Cards, you know, I had a decent knowledge from, you know, growing up with those sounds and, you know, growing up with the Super Famicom. But when I did Digging in the Carts, you know, I research wise, I went kind of deep-ish. I'd been coming to Tokyo. Back then I lived in New Zealand and, you know, I'd come to, Japan. I'd go to places like Super Potato and go digging for samples, you know, of kind of Japanese only games. So in the kind of years leading up to making the video series, I started kind of, getting a decent knowledge of things. But I, you know, even with the series, I'd still only scratch the surface. And I kind of decided with the radio series, and also there's another little project we're working on, which I can't talk about now, unfortunately, but you'll probably be the first person I tell, Kevin, once we're ready to go. You know, I kind of realized that if I'm gonna do it, I've got to do it properly. So I sat down and made myself listen to the entire history of Japanese video game music from that era. So, you know, over a course of 6 months, you know, every Famicom game, every PC Engine game, every, you know, MSX titles, PC Hachi Hachi, well, sorry, PC 8801. Mm. You know, I listened through everything, and it was immense. I didn't really realize how long it would take. And, but no, I got through it. And I guess I really wanted to, create a series that felt a little bit different to maybe, you know, cause there's a lot of other people that have done, video game music podcasts and, you know, it was very important for me to pick a selection of music that, that maybe people hadn't heard before.
And I also, would be remiss if I didn't also mention the, you know, again, with the Digging in the Card series, like that was one of the things that I think we talked about when we did the initial interviews is that, like, yeah, these are 15 minutes long, but I wish they were like 60 minutes long. Like these episodes were just like so fantastic that I wish, you know, you could continue to go even deeper. And that seems to be what you're able to do in part with this new radio series.
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, that's always the thing with when you make documentaries and, you know, when you're doing interviews for TV, it's just like, you know, I'll sit there and on average, you know, all the interviews are an hour and a half long, you know, sometimes 2 hours. And then, you know, they get cut down to 3, 4, 5 minutes more often than not. Yeah, 3 or 4. So there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make it. And yeah, having the radio show format, it gives you the ability to go super deep, to have, you know, 15, 20 minute interviews and get a lot more insight out there. So yeah, it's perfect really. But most importantly, you know, at the end of the day, the hero is the music itself. Mm. And, to be able to kind of dig super deep and discover, you know, incredible music, I've got to make mention of the fact that what has always been so important to me with what was important to Tu and I with the video series and what's really important to us, well, important to me for the radio series is, you know, it's that whole idea of what we tried to do with the video series of, you know, creating those little sequences where the music is detached from the game graphics and kind of shooting some incredible cinematography or whatever, just to kind of present the music as music itself, as this unique pioneering electronic music that, you know, it just so happened it was made for a video game, but in its own right, it's its own genre, you know? And that for me was really important with the radio series is to pick a selection of music that just, I feel really just holds its own as this kind of unique pioneering period of Japanese electronic music.
Yeah, it's been and also one other thing that I want to mention, and then I'll continue to ask you some stuff. But there was one opportunity for a little bit more of a long form discussion, and again on the Red Bull Music Academy YouTube page, there's about like it's like almost 2 hours, 2 hour long session with you and Hip Tanaka going through some of the library of his composed music and his influences, as well as you got to kind of open up a little bit more and go a little bit deeper with that too.
Yeah, definitely, man. And you know, Tanaka-san is he's incredible. He's absolutely incredible. You know, his history, you know, in the 70s playing in like reggae band.
Right.
He's just the coolest dude. I think one of the coolest dudes I've met, and I've been lucky enough to know Tanaka-san for a while now. To be able to invite him to the academy, and to have that opportunity to speak to him at length was incredible. So yeah, if people are a fan of Hip Tanaka, definitely, you know, type in RBMA Hip Tanaka and check it out. I'm sure you'll get some insight to him that you maybe didn't know about before.
Yeah, he's so cool of a dude. I think it was Hiroko from 8-4 talked him into wearing a Back of My Play t-shirt for one of the concerts that he did. I think it was the Red Bull Music Academy concert that he did. So that was pretty rad.
Totally. Yeah, no, he was wearing that at gig at Womb.
Oh, that's so crazy. That's so rad. Like,
yeah.
You know, again, like I'm people know this from listening to the show, but like I'm the person that on my way to work the other day, I had the Gradius arcade soundtrack on in my car on my way to work. Like that's like that. That is how much I love this music, and it's just great to see all the incredible production and the work that you guys are putting into just sharing this with so many other people out there. But I wanted to ask you because you had the opportunity to do this new series with Red Bull Music Academy Radio. You were able to do some more interviews. So I was kind of curious, like throughout those interviews, were there any really big, standouts of like just some of your favorite parts of those interviews or people that you really enjoy talking to?
Yeah, I think for me, because we never got the opportunity to put the interview in the we never got the opportunity to interview him during the video series. We actually we wanted to, but we didn't get in touch with him in time. Was Manabu Namiki. And I got a lot of respect for Manabu Namiki. You know, he is like Yuzo Koshiro, he is very much one of these composers that is responsible for turning on a younger generation into kind of house and techno and very, very credible forms of it, much in the same way that with Bare Knuckle, Streets of Rage, people were young kids were hearing, really quality, authentic, house and techno, and especially what was coming out of Detroit at the time in the kind of the late 80s, the inner city era, Kevin Saunderson, Derek May, obviously with Streets of Rage 3, definitely more of a kind of Jeff Mills influence in there. Manabu Namiki, 5-6 years later, especially with the Battle Garaga soundtrack, super influenced by Carl Craig and Underground Resistance, and managed to create game music that was very strongly influenced by those artists. But he managed to replicate it in a very authentic way. And, the music of Miki-san's, Shooters is, it's just incredible. I've got a lot of respect for the guy. And it was great to be able to chat with him and talk about all of that. coming up in future episodes, we've also got Shinji Hosoi, who I'm, Shinji Hosoi for one reason or another. We couldn't fit him into the series. I mean, there's still a number of interviews that we filmed that were supposed to be in the video series, but for one reason or another, we couldn't, which is a bit of a shame. But yeah, Shinji Hosoi, I got a lot of respect for him. He kind of was a Namco. He started with Namco in the late 80s, early 90s. He's best known for his work. He's best known for his work on games like Ridge Racer in that kind of mid-90s period of arcade Namco. He's still making game music now, but in the late 80s, he's just got a sound, and I guess Japan, I don't know, like Japan in the 80s, I think anyone who knows a little bit about Japanese history knows about what's known as the bubble era, especially in the 80s when the Japanese economy was going through the roof, and there's a couple of genres of music. There's a genre of music called city pop, and also I guess to a certain degree, the what was happening with techno pop, which is the YMO, Yellow Magic Orchestra kind of sound, but there's this kind of like this genre known as city pop, which is it's basically, it just sounds like the soundtrack to the Japanese bubble era. But Shinji Hosoe, in my mind, he, like the game music he made, it's just like, I don't know. It's, it, it just sounds like bubble era video game music. So yeah, so many killer soundtracks from Shinji Hosoe in the late '80s, very early 90s, especially his Namco arcade soundtracks. I'm a big fan of, so that's coming up in episode 5 that we're speaking to Hosoe's son.
Well, again, you were mentioning, you know, talks from episode 1 and the, with Red Bull Music Academy Radio, in, at least here in the States, like we can't get these on demand. But what the cool thing is that I was able to, you know, catch the, I missed the second episode live, but then I caught up with it on the weekend, and they're actually replaying these episodes pretty regularly. So that first episode is actually going to be replayed this Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern as well. So if you missed it and you're going to hear this hopefully on Wednesday when it comes out, you're going to be able to catch up with that on Sunday as well and just have some, you know, a great time and enhance your weekend by listening to some great music, some great interviews as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool. I think the thing is, you know, as you mentioned, Kevin, sadly, it's not archived in the States. It is archived everywhere else in the world. sorry about that. But what I think is kind of cool is that, you know, it forces people to listen
totally.
To the record, old school, you know, because I think the thing is when you know that something is archived, when you know that you can I can watch it at any and listen to it or watch it at any time with the right. internet. You know, you more often than not, you just, you delay it and you just, I don't know, watch a meme, click somewhere else. Knowing, but when you know that you've only got that one opportunity to listen to it, hopefully it forces people to go, you know what, I need to stop what I'm doing and listen to the radio like I used to listen to it, you know?
That's why I totally did. I set my alarm on my phone for like, it was like for 12:55 or something like that, because it was going to be coming back on at 1 o'clock. And, you know, I was there, I was sitting at my computer and I had my I had it hooked up to my speakers, had the music blasting. It was awesome. My neighbors above me were gone. So it was like the perfect scenario to be able to listen to it anyways. We're at 7 o'clock at night. Maybe I shouldn't be too loud in my apartment building. So it worked out actually extremely well for me, selfishly.
Right.
I also wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit about, you know, aside from the new interviews that you're doing with the composers, you also have people featured on the show that were influenced by the video game music as well, and how it's kind of, you know, influenced their creations and their compositions today. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the people that you've had on for the series, and if there were any kind of commonalities in the music of their composers that they brought up.
Yeah, I mean, look, another thing that was you know, really, really important to us with the video series and obviously with the radio series as well is, it's just to really show A, the influence of video game music, but B, you know, what we've been trying to do is for people outside of, you know, that normally would check video game music, because, you know, to a certain degree, when video game music is mentioned or marketed, it's more often than not, it's within, you know, video game circles, you know, fans right. of video games. And I guess, you know, I knew from, you know, I've been doing a TV show for many, many years, and I've done radio for many, many years. So I've spent the better part of the, you know, more than 10, 15 years, like, interviewing people like, you know, a lot of contemporary notable artists within electronic music, and people like Dizzy Rascal, your Flying Lotuses of the world. And, you know, we'd always vibe on how much, you know, old video game music has been played a part in inspiring us. And so we kind of wanted to create something where, you know, fans of electronic music were like, oh, video game music. And okay, so it's not just like an otaku thing, or it's not like, you know, it's not like what do you call it? Like secret shit. Like, you know, when you go, like a dirty shame, like, oh, I still listen. Oh, it's like,
right.
no, like this shit is cool. This shit influenced all of us. And yeah, and it's been great. It's off the back of digging in the carts and having your just Blazers and your Flying Lotuses. I think there was a lot of people who maybe, I don't know, they were like, they would never normally kind of go digging and or start checking those, you know, video game music. They're like, oh yeah, cool, okay, video game music, it's a thing. So And what's been really, really cool off the back of the series is like, you know, you got people like what Data Discs are doing, Brave Wave as well, and seeing like the more kind of underground, you know, respected, inverted commas, credible electronic music press like Fact Magazine and your Pitchforks of the world, they're all reporting on video game music now, and I think that's really fucking exciting, you know. It's a really, really cool time. So going back to your original question, yeah, it's been awesome for us to have you know, these international artists, because all of a sudden, you know, getting out to their audiences and their audiences are like, oh, okay, cool, video game music. And it just opens this huge world of music and sounds that like those audiences probably didn't even know to check, you know. So yeah, but your question was, who did people like commonalities between the artists? It's really interesting. I think something that's definitely come up as a regular thing is how much menu music has been a big inspiration on people. Like, yeah, menu tracks, man. There's always
so
a track.
Rad, like the 25-second, 30-second menu music.
Yeah. It's always like lots of panning and very kind of spacey, and especially kind of like, you know, as things got to like the 32-bit and era and plus, yeah, there's something about menu music that I like a lot of artists have always mentioned. Yeah, I don't know. Everyone's got their own set of influences. Yeah, I did a very terrible job at answering that question, Kevin. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, maybe I'll bounce it back off of you, because, I mean, you brought up, you know, menu music, but that's one of the things that I think makes makes video game music so special and difficult, because you are, especially back then in the 80s, early 90s, you're forced to make potentially tracks that are going to be like 30 to 45 seconds long that someone's going to hear over and over and over and over again. But they have to be so damn good that you're still going to want to, you know, continue and, you know, continue to hear that song. And potentially you're going to turn off that console. You're going to go outside and go back to, you know, quote unquote life. And that song is going to be stuck in your head forever. And you're going to like want to hear it again and just get back to that console and play some more.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, that's the thing is like, you know, I mean, I get asked this question a lot now, obviously, which is, you know, how important is the music for the games? Mm. And you know, maybe I'm a little bit biased, but I think it's the biggest. It's one of the most. It is the most important element. Obviously, the gameplay has to be good. And you know, look, you know, take for example Mario and Sonic. Yes, the gameplay is good, but you know, both Kondo-san and Nakamura-san. I mean, you know, Nakamura Masato's music was just incredible,
magical, yeah,
absolutely. And Koji Kondo's music for Mario was just the master of just creating those loops that just you'd never ever tire of. And of course, that enhanced the gameplay. Of course, that meant that, you know, you didn't mind playing it for hours and hours, and you wanted to get back to it. It was addictive. And if you think about that era, it's like if the music sucks, you don't want to play it, right?
Totally.
And, you know, but even if the game was kind of average, but it had a killer soundtrack, then, you know, you're in there.
Well, it's like you had three things. You had graphics, you had controls or gameplay or whatever you want to call it. And you had music, and like it's like watching a silent movie. Like it's not as enthralling. It doesn't really pull you in as much, and it's not as you know, potentially effective than with the incredible music that they, you know, put together for these games. And I think, like, I was out to dinner, and this is something that I wrote about a couple days ago, but like I was out to dinner last time I was out in Japan, because I was, you know, doing some work for a Japanese fitness company, and I basically went out to dinner with a bunch of higher ups, like vice presidents and executives of this like big gym chain. And they took me out to dinner, and everyone's wearing suits and like, you know, nice clothes. I'm wearing like gym clothes. And like, for the most part, we had nothing to connect on. And then I brought up, our now, who was one of our partners, like he was translating for us, he mentioned, oh, Kevin, did you do any like video game shopping? I know you like to do video game shopping. And as soon as we started talking about video games, you know, one of the executives starts like singing the Balloon Fight music. And,
amazing.
And that's like immediately like it becomes universal because we don't need to know the language to start talking about the music, or like they started like talking about or like doing like like doing the Dragon Quest and like that was something that we talked about for hours, and it also had the ability to immediately transport these rather not super serious but rather serious suited business folks back to when they were kids, like sitting in front of, you know, a glowing television playing Famicom, and like their faces lit up like they were 6 years old again. It was amazing.
Great That's so cool. That's a great story.
And that's why I think this stuff is it is so powerful. It is so powerful. But you know, along with all this stuff, you're being able to put together also great playlists that you're putting together as well. So was that part of the research process of going back and like listening to every track on the Famicom and then the PC Engine and all that stuff? And I'm kind of curious, were there any like new tracks or you know, music from games that are like, oh my god, like I didn't know about this soundtrack, I didn't know about this game, but this is amazing, people need to hear this?
Oh hell yeah, man. I mean, the thing for me, you know, as I was saying before, like when we did Digging in the Carts, you know, I spent a lot of time doing the music research for sure. That was a big part of it. And a lot of what informed, you know, what composers we were going to speak to and what the storylines would be was based on the music first, you know. Mm-hmm. But then for this the radio series and this other little thing we're working on, which I can't talk too much about at the moment, you know, I went in, and I'd never really, you know, for Digging in the Carts, we didn't really focus on MSX. So, you know, I kind of went in on MSX, also PC-8801 and a lot of the other, Fujitsu and, like a lot of the Japanese home computer, platforms. So that was the first time for me. So going into all of that, and man, I gotta say, like, you know, I was already a massive fan of Konami, and in particular, you know, this kind of period in the late 80s, early 90s, where, you know, for the Famicom, you know, Konami were invested in creating these sound expansions, and of course, all your audience, I'm sure, know about the VRC6, VRC7. But
those
for me,
magical chips, man. Oh, so good.
Yeah. For me, like the MSX chips, like the SCC, and, you know, you mentioned Gradius before, but all of those, like Gofer no Yabo, the kind of Nemesis Gradius spin-offs, like where they had the SCC chip. Oh, my God. Those all those soundtracks were incredible. And that was all new for me. And just to hear this whole new sound palette, because of the SEC chip, that was incredible. You know, like I say, man, there's so much. You'll hear it as the series progresses, but like lots of PC Engine stuff, man, like a lot of stuff from a company called Face. Their sound team was incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I discovered a lot of stuff on PC Engine that I'd never heard before, which just blew my mind. I listened through a lot of Mahjong games. Oh my God. A lot of Mahjong
unlimited Mahjong horse racing and like baseball games.
Yeah. And just when you're like, you know what, I can't handle this anymore, I need to just skip. You'll find a track deep on a really obscure Mahjong soundtrack, and you're like, oh my God, this is incredible. And then you're like, oh no, this means I can't ever skip. So,
I think it is, it's great because when we, like here in the States at least, when we had like the PC Engine of the TurboGrafx-16, like that thing did not have a very big impact, but it has. for that console, it has a very unique sound, like the Blazing Lasers like soundtrack, like the it's a very unique sound, like that maybe is more of the like Japanese PC sound, like the MSX as well, that we didn't get on the NES or the Sega Genesis Mega Drive or the Super Nintendo. It's somewhere in the middle, and it is just like some of the best soundtracks are on that thing.
Yeah, definitely, man. I mean, yeah, it's you know, it's hard to pick a favorite, but I really feel like if I look at a lot of my favorite music currently, it's definitely there's something about the PC Engine and something sound chip, and definitely all of those kind of those qualities that make, I guess, Japanese video game music appeal so much. I find so much of them on the PC Engine.
You mentioned, you know, these soundtracks coming to CD and record and vinyl and stuff, but the Hewcard disc in like Bandai Namco put together, or they have a, I forget the company that put these together. I'm sorry, but you know, there's a couple PC Engine soundtracks that are available on CD that you can get those things sent from Amazon Japan to your house globally, which are well worth checking out, and you know, some of the best music that you'll hear, and you'll want to listen to it over and over and over again, like Dragon Saber, just Dragon Spirit, great soundtracks.
Dragon Spirit's great. That's Shinji Hosoi right there. Although he did composed the arcade version, and it was ported to PC Engine, but yeah, all of those kind of those very early Namcot PC Engine soundtracks are killer.
So were there any interviews that, you know, you weren't able to acquire, any people that were just kind of either unavailable or things didn't work out that's still down the road that you'd like to talk to?
Oh yeah, definitely, man. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, you know, there were a number of interviews that we'd filmed and have you for Digging in the Cuts video series, but when for one reason or another, we couldn't play them. And it's really funny, you know, I've definitely over time, I've kind of, you know, I've checked out what some people have said in forums, like NeoGAF and kind of, you know, classic BGM based forums, and you know, people are like, I can't believe they didn't interview that guy. How come that guy's not there? How come that person but we never saw it? And it's like, yeah, no, we definitely, those people definitely were interviewed. We just, you know, we unfortunately couldn't air them, and you know, sadly those problems still you know, exist with the music, the radio series as well. Maybe at some point in the future we'll find a way to make sure that those see the light of day. I mean, the thing was for this is just the first series. So the first season, I should say, for the radio series. So, there's definitely a number of other composers that we hope to talk to as the series goes on.
So how many episodes did you produce for this season?
8 episodes.
Awesome. And those are going to be coming out every single, again, this is for the Eastern Standard or Eastern Daylight Savings Time folks, 7 p.m. on Thursday nights. But they will be continued to be re-aired over the course of the next couple of days. And even they go back to previous episodes, as well as the third episode will be coming out this Thursday.
Yeah, cool. I think, and just, you know, like you were saying earlier on, Kevin, you know, the shows are repeating a lot, and I think they're going to do a marathon. You know, they've planned a few marathons where they'll play a bunch of episodes back to back. Just follow RBMA Radio on Twitter, social media, and get those updates.
Well, throughout the process of researching all this music, I don't think we ever talked about this, but I was curious if there were any games that you found through the research process that you got absolutely hooked on that almost like caused a little bit of a, oh man, I'm kind of just hooked on this game. I should be going and you know, listening to some more soundtracks, but this game really has its hooks in me.
Yeah, definitely. I'm 100% guilty of that. man, as I was saying before, all of the SCC chips stuff for MSX. Golfo no Yabo episode 2. I mean, that stuff blew my mind. But also, so much PC Engine stuff. As I mentioned before, there was like a company called Sankindo. Sankindo produced it. Face published it. Games like Metal Stoker, that's incredible. But probably the biggest one, man, was a company called Messiah, who produced – they had a sound team called Goblin Sound, and Goblin Sound produced a bunch of soundtracks for Messiah games on the PC Engine, which are just all so killer. And that was – yeah, definitely, I think from, doing the research for the radio series – I would just, I had a job to do, but I'd just sit there and rinse out the soundtracks of games like Hisoi Kihei, Exerd. What else is there? There's also games like...
they did Shoniki, right?
They did, yeah. Yeah.
Classic, you should go check that out.
Yeah, no, seriously. All the, Energy Man, a lot of the PC Engine Messiah games, all the soundtracks are just a killer.
I was wondering, where do you fall on the, these consoles, some of them got CD attachments, including the PC Engine, including the Sega CD. Where do those factor in terms of, the coverage and the research? Are you trying to focus mostly on, music that was produced to be put on carts and chips, or, are CD-ROMs also, in the running for discussion?
Okay, well, it's interesting you say that. I think a couple of times in the series, there's little excursions into the kind of CD-ROM stuff. In particular, in an upcoming episode, we're doing a little bit of a feature on Yellow Magic Orchestra playing music, video game music that each of the individual artists from Yellow Magic Orchestra, Sakamoto-san, Hosono-san, and Takahashi-san, composed for video game soundtracks, Japanese video game soundtracks. And Sakamoto-san composed some music for a certain PC Engine CD-ROM title, so that features in it. But generally for this first series, because there's just so much music and
totally
there's good music to play, I kind of just wanted the first season to focus purely on Japan, purely on cart-based stuff. And then definitely as the series goes on, we'll start looking at, to incorporate the CDs. But, CDs, music from all around the world, music from, even like, for example, Commodore 64, whatever. Mm. As the series goes on, we're definitely going to widen it up and go around the world and look through, at machines from throughout all history. But really, I just kind of wanted the first series to be like an extension of the documentary series and just focus on, a particular era and, of course, a particular nation, which is Japan.
Love it. And I just recently got a Sega CD. I've had a PC Engine CD in the past, and it's like a little weird, middle ground between chip music and CDs, because it's not like they just went in and got an orchestra to put this stuff together. Sometimes they get like a rock band or something like that for Lords of Thunder, but it is almost like just taking those chip tunes and just almost remastering them a little bit, or trying to add a little bit more of a digital sound to it, if that makes any sense. It's weird,
right? Yeah, so, I mean, I'm looking forward to, when the time comes, which will probably I'll have to start doing it very soon, actually, considering how long it took to kind of prep for the first. I'm looking forward to kind of sitting down and diving into those worlds.
And I won't take up too much more of your time. And again, I think people, we could kind of run through all the great, guests that you have on there, all the things that are going to be covered. I know the Sega sound team is featured in one of the episodes, adding a, having like a band do renditions of some of the, best Sega video game music and arcade music as well.
Is for one reason or another, Takenobu Mitsuyoshi was supposed to be in the video series, but we couldn't make it happen. So really good to have him on the radio show. That's actually awesome. This week.
Well, I think we're kind of getting to the hour mark almost. But is there, you know, Nick, for people that are listening outside of course tuning in on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, if for some reason you live on the East Coast of the United States, otherwise you can type in a Google what's 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time in my area, but. What else should people be keeping an eye out for? I know they can also be following you on Twitter. And like you mentioned before, the Red Bull Music Academy is a great thing to check out. But you're at Nick Dwyer, D-W-Y-E-R, on Twitter.
That's it, man. You know, as I mentioned or alluded to, you know, there's a couple of other, you know, exciting things that we're working on. I would love to say things,
right? Fair enough.
But look, all I'm going to say is that we've got some really exciting things happen next year. And, you know, definitely, I won't say too much, but, you know, one of the things that we did when Digging in the Carts, the video series, came out, we did like this event in Tokyo, where we brought together, you know, Western, electronic artists that were inspired by Japanese video game music and Japanese video game artists. You know, we had this incredible, collaboration, between Wano Tricks Point Never and Manabu Namiki. Basically, Daniel Lopatin, Wano Tricks Point Never, it was very influenced by Manabu Namiki growing up and, created an amazing performance, which is a tribute to Namiki-san. We had Chip Tanaka, you know, rocking his Back of My Play t-shirt, performing. You know, I've always wanted to do more with that. So let's just say watch this space.
Fair enough.
But there's, yeah, if you're a fan of that era, that sound, and Japanese video game music, then there's some cool things in the pipeline for sure.
In the meantime, you guys can, again, like you can be like me and you can go back and you can either watch them for the first time or rewatch the Digging in the Cart series. Again, they're freely available on YouTube. You can jump on there and go check out the whole series. And if you haven't, it just set aside you. There's, you know, Red Bull Music Academy even has it in like a playlist where you can just let it go and just hang out for an hour and or hour and a half and just watch the great series and potentially, you know, you're going to get to learn about new composers that you might have not known about. You might see even some new games that you haven't heard about before because it just never came here to the States. You're like, oh, I want to go really check out Gimmick, or you can go listen to the episode that we did on Gimmick too. And just really see the incredible work that Nick and Tu did. It's just really awesome to see that continuing to spread throughout the video game community and, you know, the music community as well. And of course, like we mentioned, Thursday night, 7 o'clock Eastern Daylight Savings Time. You can turn into rbmaradio.com and you can listen as Nick not only gets to run some tunes, do some interviews, but it's just a great time to hang out. And it's actually like the perfect time for me usually, just because 7 o'clock, just get home from work, just going to hang out, listen to some tunes, listen to Nick interview some people and learn some more about this, you know, great history of video game music. It's so awesome.
Kevin, thank you so much, man. Really appreciate all the support you've given, you know, the things that we've been doing over the last little while. Really much appreciate.
You're doing the stuff that I would love to, like, you would never think would get done. You guys are doing it, which is incredible, and that's why it's just fantastic to. I appreciate all the work that you guys do for putting all this stuff together. And like I said, the audience really needs to go and check it out if they haven't already. But until then, Nick, thank you so much for again jumping on and talking some more about this stuff. I'm so pumped to see what comes next for you guys.
Thanks so much, Kevin. And hopefully next time you're in Japan, we can catch up again.
Totally. Absolutely. We will make that happen. And for the rest of the audience, we will let you go for right now. But until then, lots of great stuff to watch, lots of great stuff to listen to. And until next time, let's go listen to some great video game music. Take care.
Thanks so much, Kevin.